How's your week been? Good? It's good? It's nice just to meet each other where we're at, you know, and God is with us, whatever is going on for us. I've just had a lovely image of Jesus' face before me this week, and I've needed that. I've needed to feel his presence and sense his closeness, because I've just sold my house in Hurstbridge way too quickly, worried about my future, worried about my future security and my finances, you know. There's, you know, a lot of fear in that and quick change and transition. But I'm reminded just through this story of Ruth that we're going to look at today, that is, God is in the mundane stuff of everyday life. He's in the good times and the bad. He's in the financial pressures. He's in the moving of the house. He's in the all the things. And we can glean that from Ruth. I don't know how many of you read the book of Ruth this week. Raise your hand if you read it. Well done. So a few of you have this story fresh in your mind. It's an amazing story which reminds us that God is just ever present in everything that is going on behind the scenes, and he provides for us and he gives us hope. There is a hope through this story which starts off rather sad. Now, the story starts with Naomi and her family, like her husband and their two sons. They move away from Bethlehem, their hometown, in a time of famine. There's not enough food around. And so rather than stick with their own people in Bethlehem, they decide to go to the land of Moab, which was really the enemy's territory. The Israelites were not meant to mix with the Moabites. When they left Egypt, the Moabites would not help the Israelites. They would not let them travel through their land. And they had this other foreign god that sacrifice children to. And the Israelites were just not meant to mix with these people. And it was really probably wrong of this family to move there in a time of famine. But they were sort of seeking to get away from God's punishment, so to speak. At the time of Judges, before King David arrived, the Israelites would follow God for a while, and then they'd start going their own way and marrying foreign women and worshipping foreign gods, and God would let their enemies, you know, take over or oppress them, or, you know, there'd be a famine in the land, or God would just allow these natural consequences to happen to encourage the people to turn back to God. In their desperation, when things are a bit tougher for them, they turn back to God and they say, God, help me, and he delivers them. And the cycle goes on and on and on, we see through Israel's history. So at this time when there's a famine, Naomi's family leave there and go to Moab. Now, Naomi's husband, Abimelech, dies. His sons go off and marry Moabite women, Orpah and Ruth, and then the sons die as well. So this is a really, you know, dark night of the soul for poor Naomi. She's lost her husband. She's lost her sons, both her sons. Three women can't provide for themselves in that culture. There was a lot of, that would have been a really hard time. How are they going to live? What were they going to eat? So at this time, Naomi hears that the famine is finished in Bethlehem. So she goes home. She says partway home to her daughter-in-laws, look, there's really no future for you in Bethlehem. You're foreigners. We're women. You're probably better off going back to Moab, to your own families, where you can start again, you know, get a fresh start. And Orpah leaves. She thinks that's a good idea. But Ruth clings to Naomi and she says, no, where you go, I will go. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. And where you die and are buried, I will die and be buried. She would not let Naomi go. Now, this tells us something about Naomi, that she obviously witnessed to her God. So Ruth saw something in Naomi that she wanted. She had learned a little bit about this God, and she was willing to go and face all that hardship with Naomi, grieving, bitter Naomi, to Bethlehem, where she would not be accepted as a foreigner, a Moabite, and a woman. But she had the courage and boldness to go anyway because she glimpsed this God that she decided to put her hope in. So that's something, just the first thing to remember. She goes back to Bethlehem with Naomi and God's provision. It's the start of the barley festival. So barley, reaping, harvest, and foreigners could go to Israelites and glean in their fields. And it was Old Testament teaching that the Israelites were to allow the foreigners and the widows to come and glean in their fields, to go along behind the harvesters and collect. So they're told not to harvest right to the edge of their fields, leave some for the poor and the destitute. And as it turns out, when they arrive, Ruth says to Naomi, I'm going to go glean in a field so that we can have some food. As it turns out, she ends up in the field of Boaz, who is their family relative. He was a relative of Naomi's deceased husband. And Boaz shows such kindness to Ruth. He's heard about her kindness to Naomi. And Boaz knows that she's a noble, faithful woman. And so he says to his workmen, look after this woman, don't touch her. If she needs a drink, let her have a drink. Get some extra, you know, harvest out and let her collect it. Let's provide for this woman because she has been so faithful to her mother-in-law. And so when Ruth finishes the day working hard in the sun, she takes home a heap of food. It was a lot. It was like about 10 days worth of food that would keep them going. It was huge. No one would usually glean that much in a day. And Naomi's surprised and she says, where did you glean today? And she said, oh, this man called Boaz. And Naomi says, wow, he's one of our kinsmen redeemers. God has not stopped being faithful to us. God is good. His provision is amazing. And so Ruth stays in that field as the harvests come through, and she's safe there, and she gets enough food for them to live on. But after a while, when the harvest is running out, Naomi's decided that, you know, they need to maybe make more provision for their future. And she suggests to Ruth, take off your widow's clothing, have a bath, you stink, you need to freshen up, put on some fresh clothes and some perfume, and go down to the threshing floor where Boaz and his men are all, you know, harvesting the grain that night. And so she goes down and she waits till Boaz falls asleep, and she goes and she lifts up the garment from over his feet so his feet are exposed, and she lays down there. Now, we all think this is scandalous because we don't understand the culture of the day. She wasn't prostituting herself. This was legitimate proposal asking for marriage by the woman in that day. So there's nothing going on here, and Boaz did not take advantage of her. He was such a noble man as well. The characters in this story are just so integrous and exemplary and noble, things to aspire to. They are faithful to the covenant God and to each other and to the systems of the day and to the laws that God had given them. So these are people, you know, with higher standards than maybe Rahab and Tamar, who we've heard about in the last couple of weeks, the so far other women in Jesus' family line. So this is a nice break for us to have a slightly less scandalous story to deal with. And so she's laying there, and Boaz realizes she's there and is going, who's this? What's going on? And she says, could you lay your garment over me? Cover me with your garment, which she's saying, would you marry me and become the kinsman redeemer of our family? Because the Levirate law of the day, in their culture, as we heard with Tamar's story, Tamar had the right to be pregnant to one of the brothers or the father of her deceased husband to carry on her husband's family line. Here, Ruth is asking the same thing. I want you to marry me and have a baby to carry on my dead husband's family line. Now, this would cost Boaz a lot. He has to buy the field, as well as get a wife, as well as have a baby that baby and Naomi inherit. He gets nothing out of it, except a younger wife. But he didn't mind. So he was willing to go along with this. So he's quite willing to do this because he knows that Ruth is a wonderful woman. He actually describes her as a noble woman, which is the same words as the Proverbs 31 woman. She's a wife of noble character, a woman of noble character. And so he sets about to take action because he knows there's another closer relative who has first rights to redeem the land and the family name. And so he goes to that other family member at the city gate, and he gets 10 elders from the city and says, sit down, because this is how you do business transactions in that culture. And he said to the other relative, would you like to redeem this land of Naomi's deceased husband, Elimelech? And he says, yeah, I'll buy the land. And he goes, well, when you do, you get to have Naomi and the daughter-in-law, Ruth, to carry on the family name. And he goes, oh, no, I'm out. You're like, I'll buy the land, but I'm not giving it to someone else's name to for them to inherit. That would put my own family at risk, and it's just not worth it. And so Boaz then is the next in line. He gets the privilege. He takes the privilege. He marries Ruth. They have a baby, and they become the great-grandparents of King David. Wonderful story, yeah? So what do we learn from this? We learn that God is just amazing at providing for people's needs. He met Naomi and Ruth in their destitute state. He brought them back when it was barley harvest. He provided for their food. He set about a plan in place for a kinsman redeemer to set up their future security so that they wouldn't be at risk, so that they could survive, so that they did have food. He provides and he cares for his people. And he wrote the story of the bigger Bible story. He brought a Moabite, another foreigner, into the family lineage of Jesus Christ, which we heard about both Tamar and Rahab in the last 2 weeks for Canaanites. And here we have a Moabite. He's writing non-Jewish people, Israelites, into the story of God. They were always meant to be part of his family. And we can see as this picture of this bigger biblical story where Ruth begins and it ends. The story starts saying that it was the time of the judges where everyone did as they saw fit. So it's before the king came, before King David came. The time of judges was a dark time in their history. And so as the book of Ruth starts talking about the judges and ends with the lineage of Jesus Christ, let me just actually turn to that. At the end it says, this then is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron the father of Ram. Ram the father of Aminadab. Aminadab the father of Nashon. Nashon the father of Salmon. Salmon the father of Boaz. Boaz the father of Obed. Obed the father of Jesse. And Jesse the father of David. The same lineage that we read about in Matthew. I'm sure you're not sick of hearing that yet, because the names are getting more meaning, aren't they, as we look at them. Now, I just want to point out that one phrase, this then is the family line of Perez. That line is what breaks the book of Genesis into 10 parts. That very line, and it lists off different people, like from, you know, Noah to Abraham and the different people. It's marked into 10 sections. This then is the family line of Noah. It'll give a family line. It says it again, that line, that very phrase in Numbers. And so in the Old Testament, this is the 12th time you hear that little phrase. And that's significant in Old Testament literature, because 12 is a significant number. It's the number of tribes in Israel and Judah. And so what they're saying is, because it's here and it's talking about the line of David, that is the climax here, that King David would bring together the whole 12 tribes of Israel under his headship. And so that's really significant for the family line in that history. And we'll hear more about that next week as we, 2 weeks' time, when we hear about Mary and the climax. We're getting there, so you hear glimpses. But this is important, the lineage, the genealogy. Don't look so bored, okay? I'm excited for this. It'll all make sense at the end. But in the meantime, I just want to encourage us from the story of Ruth to hope in God's providence. He gives us hope. His providence and his sovereignty behind the scenes in our mundane everyday lives and all that we go through, those hardships, those trials, those moving, the, you know, grieving, the everything we go through. Encourage us to hold on to God through those things and have our hope in him and trust in his providence like Ruth did, and trust that he'll provide, because he truly does. He loves us. And so as we do that, we too can be people of noble character, like all the characters in the story, like Boaz. That's how you live as a faithful covenant person in relationship with God. Like Ruth, a faithful covenant person in relationship with God. And Naomi, even though she grumbled a lot, God restored her completely. Completely restored from being empty at the start. She said, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara, because I'm empty and bitter. And at the end, everyone declares she is so full, because she has all that she could ever want and more. She even ended up in the family line of Jesus Christ, the Messiah. So God honours integrity. So let us just hold on to that, hold on to hope, trust him for his provision, and be people of integrity, yeah? Let me pray. Jesus, thank you so much for these people who lived so long ago, yet we can learn from how to live our lives as noble people, hoping and trusting in you, trusting in your providence, trusting that you will redeem us and make all things right. We know that you are the true kinsman redeemer who redeems us all. And we put our hope in that, Father, for this life and the next. So help us be truly aware of your presence with us and your providence and your sovereignty in our lives behind the scenes, even when it doesn't seem like we don't know what you're doing. Even when we can't see that, we know that you're there. Help us to trust you more. Amen.